Hello and welcome to the first audio feedback for the MHT 110 Lesson 1 Discussion B. What I'll be doing is attempting to give you sort of an overall sense of the discussion and my impressions from the overall discussion each time that I grade one of these in order to provide you with some feedback and some overall understanding about what we accomplished in that particular discussion. In this discussion, I ask you to reflect on the interviewing skills that we'll be learning in this class and their connection to the actual process of interviewing and sometimes counseling or informal counseling that we will engage in as a case manager that we refer to as the five-stage interview process. Many of you, including Crystal and Angelina, talked about the challenges of confrontation that usually comes up in almost every single discussion when I teach this class. Confrontation is a major aspect of what we do. However, it's often misunderstood. We need to make sure that we understand the correct definition of what we mean by confrontation. Despite our history of confrontation, we may associate anger and acting out and sometimes even violence with the concept of confrontation, but that's certainly not our goals when it comes to confrontation in the counseling field. In fact, most of what we refer to as confrontation has to do with simply pointing out when there are discrepancies. Let's say a person says they're going to do something, but they don't do it. And we have to develop the skill to be able to point that out to the individual without the emotional content that would turn it into an angry sort of confrontation. We can simply say, okay, Jack, you and I met last week and you said that you really wanted to apply for this job. So we agreed that you would go and get an application, but you didn't go and get it all of this week, although you seem to have had some opportunity to do that. Can you explain what happened? In that particular confrontation, I'm not angry at Jack. I'm simply pointing out that he's not acting in accordance to what he said were his goals or wishes. And those are where we can really get those turning points that I care enough as a case manager to point out when you're not living up to your own expectations. Now, it might be that that conversation will turn into the fact that he didn't want that job, that he was nervous about it, or that he didn't have the skill or didn't know what to do, or he was scared about how he might have been treated when he went to the place. That brings up the kinds of barriers that our clients experience when they're doing these kinds of things in the community, and keeping in mind that our goals focus on those barriers. So as simple as a task of simply going to the store and picking up an application, bringing it so that we can work on it the next week may seem simple to us. But there might be tremendous barriers that our clients are experiencing in those. And sometimes that confrontation illuminates those barriers and we can then address them so that the next time the person will have less barriers related to their going to accomplish their goals. Now, interestingly, people like Amanda talked about that at work this may be troublesome, but certainly not at home. You have no problem confronting your kids or your spouse or your family. And again, it's that notion of that really kind of brings to light the idea that the skills that we use at work are the same skills that we would use in our personal life. There's no difference between those. The way I confront people in my personal life should be, not always, tends to be a little bit more emotionally invested, but tends to be the same way that I would confront a client. Okay, now Yvonne and Amanda talked about, in response to some of these discussions, they talked about how important relationship building is, and I think that this is really key by identifying that we are better able to do that confrontation when we have established some aspects of trust between us and our clients. They're way more willing to listen to us and to kind of go through that slightly uncomfortable confrontation process when they know that we're going to care, that we're not going to go away, we're not going to shuffle them off. Understanding that the trauma, the experienced trauma of many of our clients is abandonment. they've been discharged. They've had client. They've had staff that have left. They've had inconsistent services. All of which builds up almost an expectation of you're just one in a series of social worker related type people that have worked in my life who will not do anything for me in the long run anyway. So we have to understand going into this that as much as we are working with people to establish and accomplish their goals, there's essentially sort of a mistrust that you're not going to be there when it really matters. And then we place ourselves in a confrontation situation. As Amanda and Yvonne pointed out, if we have not built up that trust relationship, they're not going to be as receptive to that as we would like them to be. Now, some interesting discussion came out with a couple comments by Alex. He stated, first, and I'm going to pull this right out of his discussion here, said that our job is to provide the right answers. And he himself expressed some concern because of his age and experience just coming out of high school and the kind of problem solving that he had there, that he's kind of concerned about the action steps. This also related to some other discussions from Angelina, Kyle, Shelley, Arian, and Alana, all talked about coming up with the right questions. How do we actually engage in these dialogues? Sometimes, as Alex might be concerned about, individuals who are trying to accomplish things that you never have had to do. If you've never got your own apartment and here you are working with someone who's going through the steps of getting their own apartment, you're like, wow, I don't have any direct experience with that yet. I have to help this person do that. And I guess kind of a combination of these things, talking about questions and how do we talk with clients and how do we help them solve problems that we've never had to encounter. And there's two things. First of all, the major components of our dialogue with clients are simply conversational. They're very casual. The questions that we ask people are totally about relationship building. As we move through this course, we're going to look at the different micro skills, and a lot of emphasis placed on the questions, open-ended and closed-ended questions, and asking for details and giving feedback so that you can get all of the story. My philosophy is that most of the answers to someone's problems lays within their own fund of knowledge, meaning they already know the answer. They may simply be reluctant, or maybe the answer is related to a skill they used to solve in a problem years ago, but they're not seeing that the skills they use to solve that problem are the same skills that they would use to solve this problem that's in front of them. And sometimes we need to make that connection. The other part, maybe addressing Alex's concern about not knowing some of these ways of doing things, this is where you become a researcher. And it's okay to say to your client, you know, like you said, we have to come up with the right answer. That's not always true. Sometimes we approach our client and we say, I don't know that. I'm going to research that and I'm going to find that out. Or, hey, let's take out our iPads. Get the little plug for the iPads here. You take out the iPad and you look it up and you say, this is how you go about doing it. This is how you apply for a job there. This is how you do a resume or anything like that. And you model the skills. You don't necessarily have to have them all readily to go. You'll experience case managers like that. They've been in the field for years and they seem to have this encyclopedic knowledge that they just pull information out of their head. You will get that when you have years of experience within the field. So you can relieve yourself of the idea that you have to come up with the right answers and you have to be able to lay out these steps and whatnot. This is a dialogue. This is a building of a relationship that then leads to a mutual definition of what are we going to do next and a process of following up with the client. So this is not your responsibility. It's you and your client's responsibility. And truth be told, more of it falls on your client's responsibility. Okay, Nicholas, Brooklyn, Shelley, and Thomas contributed some interesting thoughts on how we treat our clients in general. I thought that was really good, how we need to be trustworthy and earn the trust. And that sort of relates to what I've been talking about with the concern about coming up with action steps and how do we deal with confrontation. and whatnot. Now, I want to move on to another one here. This was a very interesting line of conversation participated in by John and Amanda and Crystal. And they talked about not being sympathetic. And I thought that this is one of the first times this has ever come up in this class. And I think that we need to make a really strong distinction between sympathy and compassion. And I think we can be non-sympathetic and we can still have compassion. I've had clients who have made bad choices and they've ended up in trouble, whatever that is. It could be legal trouble, financial trouble, whatever. And there's part of me that has no sympathy. They understood the consequences of what they were doing and they went ahead and did it anyway. Sympathy, no. Compassion, however, can still be present. I can still understand that this is not pleasant. I can still understand that these individuals have habits of mind, habits of decision-making that often lead them astray. But I can understand that and I can still work with them. I can still encounter the frustration of them not achieving their goals. And even though there's a part of me, I walk away from those interactions and said, well, why did you sabotage your goal? Why did you make those choices? Why did you go with that friend, for example, that you know was going to bring you to the bar? Because that's all they've ever done. So we can lack sympathy, but at the same time be compassionate. Catherine, Elena, and Sarah talked about how frustrating it is to encounter someone. Let's say this is sort of related with low motivation. And when goals are not followed through on, Sarah talked about that as well. And interestingly, in response to some of those, Ryan and Cassidy talked about their own frustrations. If I'm interpreting what they said correctly, they talked about their own frustrations related to when we set goals and don't accomplish them. And I think maybe part of the sympathy-compassion discussion, the compassion part, is to understand the individuals that we're encountering. In my opinion, all have a form of depression, meaning a sense of learned helplessness. They've encountered one of the most bizarre and destructive disease processes, mental illness, and they have run up against that wall trying to make their life work so many times that it's not surprising that people just think it's all futile and they just let go and what the hell, I'm not going to try anyway. And now they have that. While at the same time, we can probably reflect ourselves that there have been many times that we have set goals and not accomplished them. I set a goal this semester, you know, coming in that I was going to be exercising 3 times a week. And, you know, the whole New Year's thing, I had this whole chart ready and here we are in February, and that still hasn't gone into place. And I'm a pretty accomplished person, and yet I can experience those kinds of regular failures in setting goals and doing things. That's where our compassion needs to come in. When we're working with someone, they experience the same sort of, man, I just don't have enough energy to do this today, that we do, that enables us to fail at our goals at different times in our lives, and add to that this mental illness thing that has created this sort of expectation of failure within the individual. So I think the compassion comes from understanding that we're not that different. And I'm sitting here and I'm working with someone and they're trying to accomplish a goal, and it seems very easy to me, but I need to be able to relate that maybe it's not easy for them. And they have an expectation that they're going to fail. And what the heck, I can just sit here and do nothing and things are not that bad. And that's where our compassion needs to come from. And understand that a person will often not work very hard because it's hard for them to see that it's going to be successful or that there's even any possibility of it being successful. So I thought that was a very rich discussion from all of you. Connecting our clients' goals, our own ability to accomplish goals, and where compassion comes in. Okay, finishing off this feedback, there's some interesting things that were added by some others. Catherine talked about humor, and Misty talked about humor. I mean, Catherine talked a little about sarcasm. And again, these things are incredibly valuable. I think the humor whether it's sarcastic or simply humor or just joking around and sometimes, you know, being relaxed and casual like that, that could be a skill. It could be added to those micro skills. I think that there's a really good time for those things to happen. Kyle, for instance, he put in that this could diffuse tense situations, you know, kind of thing. Again, this is relationship building dependent. You can't joke around. You certainly can't be sarcastic with individuals who are not going to see that. They need to get to know you as well, you know, before you can do those kinds of things. Otherwise, you'll be apologizing. And sometimes sarcasm can be extremely painful and hurtful. So we have to be, there's very valuable feedback into this discussion, but it's a something we have to approach very cautiously. And finally, I want to reflect that I was very, very pleased to see that a lot of you reflect on the experience that you've had already. Some of you reflecting on experiences you had when you were younger and when you were sort of the shoulder to cry on, and seeing that as the first indications that you were meant to go into this field. I mean, you fit that role among your friends because you had a natural talent and a natural skill, and they were drawn to that. I often say that individuals that come into the mental health field, they probably have yearbooks full of people saying, you know, thanks for being there for me, by their, you know, their friends and acquaintances and whatnot. And the difference, however, being that in fact, you probably really were there. And for some incident or another that your friends were going through. And this demonstrates to me and can demonstrate to you that you have a natural gift. The real purpose of going to school to learn about this is to kind of sharpen that sword of skills you already have. And probably a recurring theme in this class would be the idea of intentionality. Prior to education in the counseling field, my counseling practice was much more like a six-gun shooter in the West. I just took out the gun and fired. And luckily, I didn't really hurt anybody a lot, but I was kind of haphazard in my practice. As we become more and more skilled, not only in the micro skills, but in how they all come together and how our conversations with our clients have such a casual sort of tone to them, and then the use of humor and the building of relationships and the relieving of my responsibility that I have to somehow magically come up with the solutions all the time. Once you get to that point, you have this ability to think before you act, to think before you talk, that you can sit back. I don't feel the need to answer and solve this problem in the next 10 minutes, even though I might have someone who's in crisis right in front of me. This relates to crisis intervention as well. When you're so skilled and you know what to do, you have time to think. And that's probably what we see in almost all aspects of intervention, even like, say, in martial arts or something. A person who's well-practiced in martial arts is calm as they enter a confrontation because they understand what their options are and they can think about what they're going to do before they act. That's what training is all about. Okay, so that was a great discussion. Good start to the class. I hope that you enjoy these audio feedbacks. This one was a little lengthy. I kind of went on and on, so I'm up over 18 minutes now. I'll try and keep them around 10 to 15 minutes, and I'll be posting them in the class, and I'll see you next time.